November 5th, 1975, early fall in Snowflake, Arizona. Balmy mornings followed by bright, clear, warm afternoons. A crew of six loggers are driving through the Apache Sitgraves National Forest after a long day working deep in the woods. They have been commissioned to help improve the forest, clear dead and damaged trees, cut back overgrowth, and limit any potential fire dangers that may be present in the forest. As night fell, the crew piled into their rugged work truck, ready to leave the cover of the ponderosa pines. However, the crew hadn't made it far on their journey home before they began to notice a strange light in the sky. An eerie yellow light was beaming through the tree line, a light they had never seen before, and couldn't figure out where it was emanating from. They drove towards the light, like curious sailors being lured by siren song. And once they hit a clearing in the woods, there the light was in all of her majesty. About 15 or 20 foot off the ground hovered a beautiful shining dome from which the light beamed from the bottom of. It was mesmerizing, alluring, and truly otherworldly. Before the crew know it, 22-year-old logger Travis Walton had thrown open the doors of the truck and ran directly towards the light. Travis was stunned by the light. He wanted to see it closer, investigate it. Yet, as he grew closer to it, he began to be filled with doubt. Perhaps this wasn't a very smart move. As Travis approached the dome, his ears were filled with a high-pitched beeping noise that seemed to be reverberating through his whole body. Travis crouched down to get a better look at the craft. However, when he stood back up again to leave, he was too close to the beam of light. All of a sudden, a wash of light illuminated the entire forest as Travis' friends watched on in horror as his limp body hovered above the ground before dropping hard onto the earth below. His friends thought he was dead. They were scared for Travis and themselves. In a rush, they got into the truck and drove off. After the initial fear wore off, they turned back to look for Travis. But he was gone, nowhere in sight. And there was zero evidence of anyone else in the woods either. The police did not believe the crew and their alien abduction story. They thought it was more likely that a fight had broken out. But it was such a crazy story, with no evidence to prove or disprove it. And furthermore, some of the crew even agreed to polygraph tests that they passed with flying colors. It was a real conundrum. 5 days later, Travis's brother Dwayne got a phone call. It was Travis. He was walking down the side of the road and needed help. To Dwayne's amazement, he found his brother alive on the old country road. He was gaunt, had lost 12 pounds, and had 5 days' worth of beard covering his face. Travis was confused. He didn't know how he got there, where he was, and according to him, he had only been separated from his friends for a few hours, not 5 days. The police were also stumped. Some believed Travis, others thought it was a hoax, but the story only got stranger a few years later, after Travis worked with a hypnotherapist to help uncover the buried memories. According to Travis, he only remembers 2 hours of his 5-day abduction. He remembered waking up in a sort of hospital room, light flooding his eyes. He didn't move at first, for he realized he was in need of help. Yet as he looked over, he didn't see doctors, but rather 2 gray creatures staring at him. They were bald, underdeveloped, and watching him curiously. He tried to spring from the bed, grabbing a tool to defend himself. The creatures did not approach, but rather just left the room with haste, followed by Travis, running in a fit of fear. He bolted down a corridor where he was greeted by a human in a helmet. Frantically, he tried to explain his plight to the man, but he didn't respond, and only led him to another room, with 3 other unhelmeted humans inside. Travis sat down and tried to communicate with the humans, but they also were unresponsive. Soon, one of the humans approached Travis with a clear oxygen-like mask and secured it to his face. Travis looked up at the ceiling, only seeing a black void before completely blacking out. The next thing he remembered was waking up on the road he was found on. Upon waking up, he saw the bottom of the spacecraft before it ascended into the sky. This story is, of course, hotly contested, but there has never been an official police rebuttal. Travis has had a long time to mull over this experience, and his theory may shock you, for he doesn't believe this to be an alien abduction, but rather an alien rescue. Travis believes that when he stood up to go back to the truck, the beam of light hit and injured him. He theorizes the craft actually collected him to save him, fix him up, and drop him off once he was healed. Of course, there is no solid proof for that theory either. But regardless of your beliefs, the Travis Walton experience is truly out of this world. Friends, it's Becca. For the past 3 years, the West London Witch team have been dedicated to bringing you the best supernatural stories at the highest studio quality. And by team, I mean me and my buddy Danny. We do this work totally for free because we love it. We're proud of our content and appreciate the wonderful interactions we get to have with storytellers and listeners just like yourself. If you're enjoying the West London Witch, maybe consider joining our Patreon. It's a way to further engage with us and show your support for Two Creatives. If you're in a position to spare enough each month for us to grab a cup of coffee in between edits or add to the piggy bank for a new microphone, we would love to see you in our Patreon community. But I know times are tough, so if you're not in a position to join Patreon right now, that's okay. We aren't going anywhere. Head on over to patreon.com/the West London Witch. For as little as £1, $1, €1 a month, you can gain full access to our coven, a space where we share behind-the-scenes stories, dive deeper into each episode, answer your questions, and have special little treats to thank you for sharing your love and kindness with your favorite little witch. Hello, and welcome to episode 54 of The West London Witch, a podcast where we share stories about those moments where we find ourselves very much not alone. We have covered cryptids, ghosts, demons, and angels on this show, but there is one paranormal phenomenon that we have never touched: aliens. For the past 3 years, I have been tirelessly searching for the perfect extraterrestrial story to share with you. So today, it is my great pleasure to introduce you to Dave Scott, host of Spaced Out Radio, a nightly live radio program that covers everything from cryptozoology to conspiracies. I'm Rebecca Strazina, and this is The West London Witch, episode 54, We're Not Alone Out Here.
Well, first off, I want to just say to your audience, that I am not a researcher. I am not an investigator. I am someone who is a journalist who spent 10 years in journalism, went to college for journalism, and I am an experiencer of the unknown as well, which has kind of brought me to this realm of the unknown, trying to figure out my own quest towards the phenomena that exists all around us. Now, I have had experiences with ghosts, hauntings, cryptids, and UFOs and extraterrestrials, but the stories that I'm going to share with you tonight are very, very close to me because they have really rounded out a person from who I was to who I am now. When you see something that is unbelievable, that your eyes are not jiving with your brain in trying to figure out what is actually truly in front of you, and it plays with your body, it plays with your soul, because everything that is supposed to be real is, but everything that isn't supposed to be real now is as well. The one thing that I always say to people is this: you don't have to believe me. And frankly, I don't care if you believe me. Okay. You were not there. You were not there to see my emotion. You were not there to see how I reacted. You were not there to see what I saw. And it is up to you whether you choose whether or not to believe what I'm about to share with you. In March of 2014, I went to bed like any normal night, and I had a situation happen that I really don't know if it was a dream or not. I was fast asleep. Next thing I know, I wake up. I am in a bright white room, and there is walls around me. I know they're there, but I can't see them because of the bright white light. There's a floor below me. I know it's there, although I can't see it because of the bright white light. There's a ceiling there. I know it's there, but I can't see it because of how bright the room is. And I'm standing in the middle of this room, and this very deep, manly voice says to me, "Dave, we no longer want you watching any more television shows. We don't want you watching any more movies. We don't want you reading any more books on this phenomena. We don't want you ghost hunting. We don't want you doing anything to try and learn about this subject. However, we give you permission to watch YouTube videos." And strangely, because it didn't make sense to me, I said, "All I'm trying to do is figure out what is going on with me. Why are you taking everything away from me except YouTube videos?" The voice then comes back and says, "The answer is simple. You will be able to tell what is real and what is fake."
The next morning, Dave woke up in bed with a very vivid and clear recollection of this dream/experience. He didn't dwell on it too much, but decided to abide by the warning not to do any more research or investigating into the unknown. For the past year, he had been on a journey of self-discovery and decided it was time to allow the world to open up to him naturally and in its own time.
So this leads us to 3 weeks later. On April 10th, 2014, I was leaving work and I was about to meet my partner at our friend's house, who had a 10-acre property in Mission, British Columbia. Now, to paint a picture for their property, there was only two houses on their street.
The owners of the property were close friends with Dave and his wife and had been experiencing what Dave calls high strangeness occurring on their land.
Everything from ghosts and ghouls to fairies flying through the trees. It was a mini Isetti ranch that they lived on.
However, on this particular night, things were about to get a whole lot stranger.
Here's what happened. I was driving home from work, which was about 39 minutes from my work to the house where I was meeting my partner. And about halfway to their house, I started getting a major migraine headache. And I suffered from migraines back then. And the closer I got to their house, the harder it was for the pain in my head. I pulled into the driveway. I walk inside the house and my partner says to me, she goes, "Are you okay?" And I said, "I don't know how long I'm going to stay. I have a migraine going on and my eyes are and head are absolutely killing me." And she goes, "Well, do you want to go home now?" And I said, "No, we just got here. You just got here. You want to have tea?" I said, "I'll just go sit on the couch, close my eyes and see if I can get rid of this pain."
So Dave goes into the living room to sit down, put a pillow over his eyes and pray that the pain subsides quickly. However, after about a half an hour, as the pain began to melt away, Dave realized he wasn't actually suffering from a migraine at all.
It was a set of shapes that were pulsating in my head. It started off at the front of my head as a square, moved to the right side of my head as a triangle, moved to the left side of my head as a circle. After the pain completely subsided, after about half an hour, I immediately got hit with an anxiety attack. And during that anxiety attack, I knew I had to go back into the back field because something was there and I was going to see something. And at this point, my partner had moved onto the love seat that was beside me. And I look at her, I open up my eyes and I said, "I got to go outside right now."
As Dave scrambled to put on his shoes, his partner asked him if he'd like her to join him.
And I said, "No, you're not allowed. You need to stay inside with our boy," because our son was only about 9-10 months old at that point. The lady of the house, whose name I never mention, because we are no longer friends, she looks at her hubby and she's like, "Dave is picking something up. We need to go outside right now." I looked at her and I said, "He's not invited." I have always questioned since that time why I would tell her that her own hubby is not invited to come into his backyard in his house. Now, the lady of the house was very intuitive, but very narcissistic at the same time, as I would later learn. And I trusted her at that point with everything. So I said, "You and I need to go outside right now." So we get our shoes on and we go out the front door and start to walk towards the back of the house. Now, if you understand the lower mainland of British Columbia, it is very much like Washington State, Oregon State, Northern California, where it's part of a rainforest. We go outside. It is a spring night on April 10th. We're at about 10 o'clock at night right now. And it is a very low, misty cloud level where it's not raining, but everything is damp and soaked. The clouds were low, but you could feel the energy of whatever was out there.
The pair walked to the bottom of the yard, to a low fence that divided the farmyard from the overgrown forest on the rest of the property.
So we stood out there kind of looking around, feeling the energy. And my friend says to me, she goes, "Well, where are they? What's going on?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "But it feels tense out here." She goes, "Well, why don't you ask them?" So I did. I said, "Out of God's peace, love, and light, you called us outside. Can you please show us where you are?" Boom. Like a snap of a finger on my command, the entire back fields between my friend's property and the neighbor's property lit up like a Christmas tree with the brightest white light since that bright white room that I was standing in. It shone right through the trees. It lit up like you would light up a tennis court when turning your lights on at night. It was that bright. The grass was lit up. The trees were lit up. There are no lights in that area. There are none.
Instantly, Dave's natural skeptical nature washes over him. Could this be some wild cosmic coincidence? He begins to critically think about the unfolding of these events.
I ask the question in the same volume that I'm talking to you as I tell this story. There is no way that that light 150 yards away from us could have heard me. Second, when I was listening around, looking at the light, I was thinking, okay, do I see shadows? Do I hear people? Are there people talking? Are there people laughing? Is it one of those 100,000 or million candle watt flashlights that you can buy it at your local camping store or hardware store that would light up something that bright? No, I hear no sound. I hear no laughing. I hear no music. And then after 30 seconds, the lights go out.
Dave was shocked. He couldn't believe what he had just witnessed.
I sat there with my jaw open, and my friend was like, holy cow, I can't believe that just happened. Do it again. Do it again. See if they'll turn the lights back on. I said, yeah, of course. I said, if you are of alien descent out of God's peace, love, and light, can you please turn your lights back on? Boom. Lights come back on my command. The white light is now brighter through the trees. It is now hitting the ground. It's hitting the trees on the opposite side of my friend's property. It's going higher up the trees than it did before. And I needed to know more. I needed to see more. So I started moving to my right to try and figure out where this light source was coming from. And as I moved beyond the trees so I could see, that's where I saw this vertical blue cylinder sitting on the ground. And it was about 20 to 30 feet in height. I could tell that because of the trees that separated the property. And there was this black cloud that was running counterclockwise that would go up halfway and then half come all the way down and be swirling around it. The white light was emanating from the bottom of this blue cylinder. And I'm standing there looking at this blue cylinder saying, what the hell is this?
After 30 seconds, the lights went out again. Stunned and amazed, Dave's friend suggested they approach the cylinder to investigate it further.
My friend then says, let's walk up to it. Let's get closer. I said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I said, you're standing right here with me. She goes, I want to move up. I said, no. I said, we don't know what this is. And I saw fire in the sky. That's all that I could think of at that time was Travis Walton getting hit by that beam of light and then things happening.
Dave refused to allow the pair to approach the cylinder. He was worried about all the risks and variables they simply couldn't predict or prepare for.
I said, you're going to stand right here with me. You are not going over there. I said, because if you go over there and something happens to you and I go back in your house alone, I'm suspect number one. I said, I am not taking that chance and you're staying right here with me.
While continuing to view the cylinder from a safe distance, Dave asked whatever or whoever he was communicating with one last question.
And I said, just so I know I'm not crazy, can you please turn your lights on one final time? Lights come on again. It's the exact same thing. I'm staring at the blue cylinder. There's the black cloud going up and down the cylinder. The white light is still emanating absolutely everywhere. I mean, it's the most incredible thing I've ever seen up until that point. And then after about 30 seconds, turned its lights off. But it did something strange after that. You know, when you are looking up in the sky at night and you see these, all of a sudden, these big flashes of white light in the sky and then they just disappear? Those used to happen all the time over my house. And what I had learned up until that point was that a lot of satellites had iridium flares to move them. They had reflection of the sun off their own tin foil because satellites don't have lights. But anytime they make a quick movement or we see something moving in the sky, it's because they are high enough where the sun's light trajectory, even though it's dark where we are, it is still light enough to reflect off of their movement. But I used to have these blow up white lights over top of my house all the time. Getting back to this craft or whatever it was on the ground, it started turning its lights on and off, on and off. on and off. And it did this about 9-10 times before it went dark for good. That led me to believe that what was actually flying over my house when I would sit out on my patio and watch the stars counting satellites, or what I thought were satellites, were not officially satellites. It was something else.
For the next few minutes, Dave tried to continue communicating with the cylinder, but there was no further lights or sound.
There was no nothing. This thing was gone. We then turned to go to walk back into the house, because remember, we're behind the house. And we turn and the lady looks up and she goes, "What is that?" And she looks up into the clouds, which are only a couple hundred feet above us. And there is an orange orb sticking out of the cloud. And we stared at this for 30, 40 seconds. And then the orb kind of sucked its way back into the cloud. And as it sucked its way into the cloud, lighting up the cloud in orange, the same white light that we saw on the ground rippled through the clouds like a lightning bolt. And then both lights disappeared.
In today's society, after hearing a story as incredible as this, our next question is, where's the evidence, the proof, the receipts, if you will?
Now, a lot of people will sit there and say, did you take pictures of it? Did you record it? Did you do anything that would provide evidence outside of an anecdotal story? The answer is no. And the reasoning is this. The owners of the property had so much going on that they actually wanted to have their own study location. Okay, there was nothing scientific about it. There was nothing about putting this out in the press and making money off of it. They wanted the phenomena, whatever the phenomena was, which was Sasquatch, ghosts, spirits, UFOs, aliens, fairies. They wanted everything that was part of the phenomena to be there and know that, and the phenomena know that they had a safe spot there. They didn't allow drinking on their property. They didn't allow any type of hallucinogens or narcotics. So there was no going on ayahuasca. There was no going on mushrooms. There was not even pot smoking allowed on their property because they didn't want to upset the phenomena that was happening on their grounds. So no, we didn't get anything of evidence except eyewitness testimony.
This experience rocked Dave's paradigm. For the next week, he was flooded with questions. Being a journalist, his natural inquisitive nature took over. He needed to know more. He traded sleep for long nights of research, scouring the internet for answers.
Did not find anything on Google. I went through so many different colors of blue trying to figure out that color blue that I was seeing in the blue cylinder. The only thing close that I could get to it that I could find was the luminescent blue from police emergency lights. But that wasn't quite it. It was a little darker. It was a little bit more amazing than that police blue. And on the fourth day, we got a phone call from the lady of the house and said, "Hey, I've met a new friend. She's coming over for tea. We'd like you guys to come over on Wednesday and meet up with her. We could tell her what happened in the forest and everything that goes on." So about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we went back over to the farm. We had been there since the night of the UFO. And I was pacing around the house because I wasn't there for tea time. I wasn't even really there to meet the lady who we were going to meet because I wanted to go back in the field. It was a beautiful spring day, not a cloud in the sky, very warm, about 18, 19 degrees Celsius. So just under 70 degrees Fahrenheit. It was a beautiful, beautiful spring day.
After 20 minutes of salutations and small talk, Dave was introduced to a woman named Samantha Moe.
Now, Samantha is a lifelong ET contactee, and she wanted to share some of her stories with us. And that was fantastic, except she caught me pacing around. And she looked at me after about 25 minutes and she goes, "You really don't want to be inside, do you?" I'm like, "No." She goes, "You want to go outside and see what was going on?" I said, "Yeah, I do."
Samantha asked if she could accompany Dave while his friends and partner remained inside the home. The pair headed to the backfield as Dave recounted the previous experience to Samantha.
Now, I used to bring my two dogs over to play with the two dogs on the farm. And they would all run around and they would play. I mean, 10 acres for a dog to run around, that's a lot of fun. And so all four dogs started following us into the backfield. This is going to become very important later. So after about 20 minutes of showing Samantha around, Samantha and I standing in the middle of the field, and she says to me, "Hey, Dave, do you want to walk in the forest?" And immediately I knew that this was going to be mind-altering and life-altering. And I said, "Yeah, what the hell?" And she goes, "You know we're probably going to see something." I said, "Yeah, I know." I took a deep breath. So what the hell? After what happened the other day, I'm ready for anything. And then she makes a weird comment. She goes, "But I really don't know if they're going to be there because from what I know, aliens don't like dogs."
With that in mind, they tried to get the dogs back towards the house. But the dogs were having too much fun and just ran ahead deep into the forest.
So we walk into the forest and we could see the dogs running around us. They're having a good old time. "Hey, we're going for a walk." You know how dogs get. And we walk another 50 yards into the forest. And Samantha all of a sudden gets this perplexed look on her face. And she's looking all around. I said, "What's the matter?" And she goes, "Dave, where are the dogs?" All four dogs are gone. "Puppies, where are you?" No answer. Okay. So like stupid people do in a horror movie, we keep going, Samantha and I. And we walk about another 50 yards into the forest. And Samantha jumps on this tree stump. And she's looking around and she's got that look on her face again. And I stop and she says, "Dave," and I stop and I'm about 18 inches from her. She goes, "I don't want you to be afraid, but I want you to look that way and tell me what you see." So I'm 40 years old. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm with a woman that I barely know in a forest where dogs just ran off and disappeared. And I take a deep breath. I turn to my left and I looked in the forest. And all I said was, "Samantha, what the F is that? What the F is that, Samantha? What the F is that?" Because 200 feet in front of us, there is a 10 to 12 foot extraterrestrial standing there in the forest staring back at us. It was light tan in color, like if you put too much cream in your coffee. And I saw the head, I saw the neck, I saw the body. I didn't see the arms, didn't see the legs. And it's standing there staring at us. And I am frozen. I want to tell you that I was not afraid of what I was seeing. What I was afraid of is that everything in my life up until that point was now garbage. You know, we all carry a little rule book in our life that we have been taught by mom and dad, grandpa, grandma, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, teachers, coaches, mentors, elders, if you're religious, priests, reverends, pastors, whoever. I was always taught that God is good, the devil is bad. When you're good, you go up. When you're bad, you go down. But nobody in my 40 years of life at that point What the hell do you do when you're at 2 o'clock in the afternoon in the middle of a forest and you're staring at an extraterrestrial?
There Dave stood, frozen in the forest, staring directly at an extraterrestrial who was staring back at him.
Next thing I know, as I am looking at this, there was a second creature there that I did not see. This second creature, Samantha described as about a 6-foot gray.
A gray is your classic alien creature. Humanoid in form, with dolphin skin color and texture. Large almond eyes, an enlarged head devoid of hair, ears, or a nose. They're also sexless and commonly connected with alien abductions and interactions.
And this second creature starts telepathically communicating with her and says, "You are more than welcome to come over and say hello. We are not here to harm you. We are not here to take you. However, we are worried about the man's health." Now, knowing that Samantha was a girl, still is a girl, and I'm a guy and the only guy there, and there's only two of us in the forest, I know they were talking about me. Now, once again, I bring up the Travis Walton incident because that's my reference point to UFOs and alien abduction. And Samantha says, "We've been invited over. Do you want to go?" "No. Come on, they've invited us over. They already said they're not going to take us." "No, I'm not going." "Come on, let's go." "No, what about my free will says I don't have to go. I don't want to go." "Come on, they're not going to hurt us." "No, please, I don't want to go." "Well, I'm going." And she starts walking down the trail. And I yelled at her, "Samantha, please do not go. Please do not leave me here alone. I am not going back into that house alone because someone I just met got taken by these things. I'm suspect number one." Twice in 5 days, I'm saying I'm suspect number one. My God.
Begrudgingly, Samantha agreed to stay with Dave, and together they stared at the creatures deep in the forest.
And then we started getting the feeling that if we went to on a different trail to a different part of the forest, that we would see more. So we did. We said goodbye to these ones. We actually waved at them. We go to the other part of the forest. Now, that wasn't as exciting because when we went there, there was nothing there. You would see something move out of the corner of your eye. You turn and look. It's a leaf falling or a bird flying by or a squirrel making noise in a tree or something along those lines. We stayed there for about 10 minutes and didn't get any extraterrestrial action. So we walked back to the original spot to where they were, and they were gone.
As the pair left the forest and re-entered the farmyard, they were surprised to be greeted by all 4 dogs.
So we walked back to the farm. 4 dogs with us. And walk inside. Tell the ladies what we saw. And that led to a life of change and confusion.
Understandably, this experience revolutionized Dave's world and left him with a lot more questions than answers. He continues to seek solutions in this supernatural sphere, and his inquisitive mind is never sedated. This is just one of Dave's many stories about his experiences with the supernatural.
I've seen Bigfoot. I've seen aliens. I've communicated with ghosts. I've been attacked by ghosts. I've sent ghosts away. I've been abducted. I've heard Sasquatch talk. I've seen fairies flying over. I've made premonitions that come true. It's opened up a bunch of doors that I'm not even close to understanding.
This all led me to think, why you? Why Dave Scott? Why Travis Walton? Why the hundreds of thousands of other witnesses to UFOs?
It's a million-dollar question, isn't it? I don't know. I would like to know. Every experiencer that I have ever talked to, the million-dollar question is, why me? Doesn't matter whether they're a radio show host, they are a lawyer, a doctor, a construction worker, or they work at Walmart, or they're a server at a restaurant. Doesn't matter what their career path is. We all have the same thing in common. Why you? Why me? I'm just a regular middle-aged man who has extraordinary experiences. I'm a good storyteller to a lot of people, and to others, I'm just a guy who wants 15 minutes of fame.
Regardless of why or what people may think about experiencers and their accounts, Dave is not alone. According to an unclassified report by the Office of National Intelligence of the United States of America, reports of UFOs or unidentified aerial phenomena are rapidly rising. According to the report itself, there have been a total of 510 UAP reports as of August 30th, 2022. And those are just the ones the U.S. government have listed and acknowledged. How many others have simply been unreported or disregarded? There is so much stigma related to UFOs, extraterrestrials, and alien abductions. And at the same time, there are hundreds of TV shows, books, movies, and documentaries regarding the subject. It's almost equal parts adored and abhorred. But I don't believe that any of us haven't looked up into a bright, starry sky and asked the question, what's out there? Is it just us? Are we all alone out here? Or is there more beyond what the eye can see and the mind can comprehend? This is just one of the stories Dave shared with me. If you'd like to hear more of Dave's terrifying and fascinating experiences, head on over to the West London Witch Patreon. And don't forget to tune in to Spaced Out Radio, live every Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Do you have a spooky story you'd like to share? I'd love to hear it. Drop me an email at thewestlondonwitch@gmail.com or find us on Instagram and Facebook at The West London Witch. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. And come and follow us for additional content on Instagram and Facebook. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. The West London Witch is created by me, Rebecca Strazina. Our sound designer and production magician is the incredible Danny Cross. Our theme music was bespokely written and performed by the wickedly talented Kyle Hall. Our cover art is the beautiful collaboration between Lizzie Wilson and Jake Bowser. Special thanks to Ms. Sinead Bowers, our quality control and biggest cheerleader. And thank you to you, all of our listeners all over the world. These are your stories. Thank you for sharing them with us.